A brisa says, Rabbi Eliezer says, a stolen sukkah and a sukkah that's built on public property are possible. Chacham say it's kosher. A nakam said machleik is only where one forces an owner out of a sukkah and then uses the sukkah as his own. That would be a problem. That would be machleikus. However, in that case, Rabbi Eliezer says he's not yoitza because he holds that one is only yoitza in his own sukkah. Therefore, whether he holds it, the land can be stolen, karkan exeles, in which case it's a stolen sukkah, or whether he holds that a land can't be stolen, in which case it would be as if he's borrowing the sukkah, he'll still not be yoitzim as a sukkah. The Rabbanan say it's kosher because they say that karka ain't an exeles. Therefore, it's as if the thief is sitting in a borrowed sukkah, which they say is it's kosher. A borrowed sukkah, they say it's kosher. However, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbanan would agree that in a case where one stole wood and built a sukkah with it, he is yoitza his mitzvah, and he only needs to pay the value of the wood that he stole. Mora says this must be the machlekes because the Braisa compares the case of a stolen sukkah to the case of one who built it on public property. Just like in the second case, the case under discussion is where the land does not belong to him. The first case must be discussing the same set of circumstances. Mora says, Amaisa, a woman complained to Rav Nachman that the Reish Galusa sukkah was built with wood that was stolen from her and she wanted it returned. Rav Nachman told her, you can only get the value of the wood returned, but you cannot force the return of the actual wood. Ravina said, the Rabbanan said that a stolen beam that is used in a sukkah need not be removed and returned. Rather, the thief can simply pay the money for the beam. This was instituted to help one do tshuva by not requiring him to dismantle the whole sukkah in order to give back what he stole. It's an easy, they made tshuva an easier form of tshuva. In fact, Mara already said that no, you don't have to return the actual wood of the sukkah, so why would we think a beam is different? Mara answers, we may have thought that a good beam is more difficult to find and to buy, and therefore you should be required to return the actual beam. Ravina therefore teaches that he doesn't have to do so. Mara says, this leniency only applies during sukkahs. However, once sukkahs is over, he must dismantle the sukkah and return the beam. However, if he permanently installed the beam with cement, even after sukkahs, he does not have to return the actual beam. Zok the Gemara, Braisa says a dried out lulav is possible, but Behuda says it's kosher. Rava says machlek is only regarding a dried out lulav. The Rabbanon and the Tanakhama say that we compare lulav to esrog regarding which the Torah says hadar, and a lulav must also be hadar, and therefore it's possible if it's dried out. But Behuda says that we don't compare lulav to esrog, and therefore a dried out lulav is kosher. However, all agree that an esrog has to be hadar. In fact, in our Mishnah, Behuda says that you have to tie the lulav, you have to bind the lulav, you have to make an ogud. Presumably this is because it has to be hadar, and proves that Rabbi Yehuda does require hadar by lulav as well. And for the Gemara, Bryce explains Rabbi Yehuda requires it because the Torah refers to the lulav as kapis tamarim, from which he learns that the lulav must be closed, and if it's not, it has to be tied together. But it's not a hadar requirement. Back to Gemara, the Mishnah says Rabbi Yehuda says the lulav may only be bound with a ring made of the lulav material itself. Presumably this is to make it nice, and we see that he requires a hadar for lulav as well. Rav explained Rabbi Yehuda holds that the binding of the lulav is part of the mitzvah. The reason it has to be made of the lulav itself is so that the mitzvah of the binding not be done with a new species. It's not part of the four minim, but we can't have a fifth min. It has nothing to do with hadar. In fact, Rabbi Braisa says that a dried out lulav and an esrog may not be used, and Rabbi Yehuda says that it may be used. We see that he doesn't even require hadar for esrog. Rabbi says Rabbi Yehuda was only referring to the lulav, not the esrog. Avada, esrog requires hadar. In fact, the Braisa said that just as one may not use less than the arba minim for species, one may also not use more than a four. So now that seems obvious. Why does the Braisa have to teach us to us? So we would think that since Rabbi Yehuda says that binding is necessary, if one brings a fifth min and doesn't bind it to the other four, it should not be a problem. The Braisa teaches that case is still a problem even if you don't bind the fifth min with the other four. In fact, the Braisa says, if one doesn't have an esrog, he should not use another fruit in its place. That seems obvious. Mara says, we would think that one should use another fruit so that people shouldn't forget the whole mitzvah of esrog. The Braisa teaches, therefore, that it should not be done because people may come to think that any fruit is a kosher to be used as the fourth min, for the esrog. For the Gemara, Bryce says that Rabbi Yehuda says that an old dried out esrog is kosher. So you see, clearly he doesn't hold of hadar. Zok Gemara to Yufta of Rava. Obviously, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of hadar when it comes to esrog either. For the Gemara, Mishnah says that Rabbi Yehuda says that a green esrog is possible. Presumably, this is because he requires the esrog to be hadar. Bryce says no. He says it's possible because he holds a green esrog is not fully ripe yet, and therefore he holds it can't be used because it's not a ripe fruit, not because it has to be hadar. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda says that an esrog must be larger than the size of an egg. Presumably, this is because he wants it to be nice. You see, he has a requirement of hadar on esrog. Mara says no. He says it's possible if it's smaller, because again, when it's smaller, it's not fully ripe yet, and therefore it can't be used, not because he has a requirement of hadar. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda says that an esrog can't be too large. You have to be able to hold two esrogim in one hand, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Presumably, this is because again, he requires that the esrog be nice, and he holds a hadar for esrog. Mara says no. He says it can't be larger because that if one needs to maneuver the esrog into his left hand and the lulav into his right hand, he won't drop the esrog and cause it to become puzzle. In fact, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why does the pasuk say hadar altogether if there's no hadar requirement? Mar says it teaches that the esrog is a fruit that stays on its tree from year to year. It's the fruit hadar bi'ilon le'mishana l'shana. Mishnah said, "Shalasher v'shalir hanidachas." Rava said that a lulav used for avodah zarah is kosher b'diavad. So why does Mishnah say it's possible? The Gemara says the Mishnah is discussing an asherah from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, which has to be burnt. Therefore, it's as if it's burned and it lacks the minimum size necessary to be a kosher lulav. Mishnah said, "Niktam roisher." Huna said it's only possible if the top is cut off. However, if the top is only split, it remains kosher. In fact, the Brisa says that a lulav that is split is possible. Rav Papa said the Brisa is discussing whether a lulav is split so severely that it's shaped like the letter Y. The Zakhmar the Bryce said that if a lulav is bent like a sickle, it's possible. Rava said that's only if it's bent to the front, away from the spine. However, if it's bent backwards toward the spine, it remains kosher because that's a normal way of growing. Rav Nachman said if it's bent to one of the sides, it's possible. Others say that it's kosher. Rava said a lulav that has leaves on only one side of the spine is possible.